Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, a continuation of our ongoing in-depth investigative reporting series, Toxic Teeth, Mercury Dental Amalgams, examining the controversy, analyzing the debate. Today I'm going to focus upon what actually happens when that silver filling that we see so many people have in their mouths, the most common filling in America is amalgam filling, and it's called an amalgam filling. It's really an amalgamation where 52% of that amalgam is mercury. The proponents of mercury fillings, including the Dental Association and most dentists, claim that there is no problem. It stays encased within the actual dental filling and that it doesn't escape. It does. When it does, it forms methylmercury. Common organisms of the mouth and intestines can convert elemental mercury into methylmercury, an organic form of the metal that attacks the nervous and immune systems. The intestinal functioning and the allergy-triggering mechanisms are also adversely affected. Methylmercury can be particularly devastating. It's absorbed through the intestinal wall 45 times more rapidly than mercury and is retained in the body longer. Methylmercury is 1,000 times more potent in causing genetic damage than many of the other elements. The next most powerful known agent is called cochinocine, and mercury is at least 1,000 times more potent than that, and that's according to Swedish professor Claes Rimmel. In experiments with fruit flies and onion root cells, extremely low doses of methylmercury at 0.1 parts per million or less inhibited mitosis and caused chromosome breakage. Sublethal doses also decreased the fertility rate in mice and increased the rates of litter reabsorption in stillbirth fetuses in pregnant mice. Let's look carefully at the effects of methylmercury. Methylmercury can cause harm to every part of the body. It leads to bleeding and bone loss, a loss of muscle coordination, impaired vision and a sense of smell, kidney and glandular dysfunction. It is 100 times more toxic to the nervous system than is elemental mercury. Methylmercury can permanently damage the brain, permanently damage the nervous system. In fact, you would find it difficult to find too many things that do more damage. Just following a large exposure, high levels of methylmercury can lodge in the brain for 10 years or more. Unlike elemental mercury, which touches the outside of the cell and hinders its ability to interact with others, methylmercury actually penetrates the cell. With the addition of a few more mercury molecules, it kills the cell. Methylmercury even passes the blood-brain and placental barriers. According to Dr. Huggins, quote, "There is virtually no barrier in the body to methylmercury. It can go to every cell in the body." Unquote. When it passes the placental barrier, it accumulates in the fetal brain and blood, thereby increasing the fetus's level of red blood cells to 30% above that of the mother. Indeed, pregnant women who show no signs of methylmercury poisoning can give birth to a child with neurological disorders caused by either methyl or mercury or methylmercury. The effects of mercury exposure on children include extensive changes to the brain that affect the entire cortex, including the frontal lobe, up to 55% reduction in the actual weight of the brain, and a heavy loss of neurons. In cases where the neuron loss exceeds 50%, decortization syndrome develops. The link between dental amalgams, meaning your silver fillings that your dentist puts in your mouth, and the presence of mercury in your brain tissue is not new. It's new to your dentist, new to the Dental Association, but the literature has been there for some time. Let me just give you some examples. And again, what I'm attempting to do is actually share with you the valid scientific literature. I am not giving you hypothesis. I am not giving you my opinion. I'm trying to give hard scientific data. Virtually every statement that I'm making is backed up by good quality scientific studies. And an entire transcript of all of the scientific literature that I'm sharing with you today, all of that can be found on my webpage at GaryNall.com. And I do this simply because for too long, debates in public health have focused upon who tries to be right rather than what is right. And more often than not, people will claim that they are right, yet they do not have the science on their side to back them up. So I'm simply showing by the presentation of this information that we have good quality science to establish all the statements that I am making. Nothing that I am saying today is without a solid scientific basis. Now, ask your dentist or ask the Dental Association. If they're claiming that the mercury in your mouth is safe, can they give you the documentation to support it? If they can, then I would like to see a copy of it, because that is going to be based upon opinion, not studies. I'm interested in the studies that are factual, not opinion. So otherwise, you'll go to your dentist today and you'll say, I was listening to the Gary Nall program, and he was making statements that the silver fillings that you're suggesting I put in my mouth could be doing some serious harm to me, to my developing fetus. In all probability, the answer would be, well, that's just nonsense. Of course they're safe. Do you think we would put anything in your mouth that would cause harm to you or developing fetus? Absolutely not. We've been using mercury for over 150 years, and there's been no evidence that it even gets out of the encapsulated filling, and it's inert, and it wouldn't cause problems even if it did. If you were to say, could you actually give me some studies proving that? They could not. Their studies don't exist. These studies do. Let me give you the actual studies. And again, when I make a statement here, I do not expect you to take my word for it, but I don't want you taking their word for it either. Ask each of us, prove your point. So if I give you a statement, which I am right now, it's by Eggleston and Nylander, Correlations of Dental Amalgam with Mercury and Brain Tissue, the Journal of Prosthetic Dentistry, December 1987, page 704. That's just one example. I would also show you the Swedish Dental, Dental Journal, which is their official journal, volume 11, page 179, an article by Lind Friedberg on mercury concentration in the human brain and kidneys in relation to exposure from dental amalgam fillings. We're talking about human beings here, not animals. My next statement I'm going to give is in Biometals, September 12, page 227. It's a peer-reviewed journal and by seven authors, and it's called Dental Amalgam Mercury Exposure. And it talks about the mercury that gets into our body, and also I have at least 16 articles from German journals, the International Journal of Epidemiology, volume August 27, 1998, page 667, an article entitled Dental Amalgam and Multiple Sclerosis, a Case-Controlled Study in Montreal, Canada. So I'm just giving that as an example. If you go to my webpage, you'll find 227 references. That's 227 references. This is not opinion I'm sharing. Just wanted to clear that up so that at least we understand that even though what you're hearing may seem extreme compared to what you're normally going to hear, there is solid, solid scientific evidence. So strong is this evidence that the information I'm giving today, I believe that you'll be seeing it presented in a major lawsuit within the next 2 weeks against the Dental Society, certainly the one in Canada. So let's go into this in some depth. Oh, by the way, just as an aside for one moment, I told you that for the last 6 months I've been doing a lot of efforts behind the scenes and getting support groups all over in one state trying to get one bill passed that would protect the patient so they could have freedom of choice in the physician or dentist so they would not be harassed. Because in some states today, if a dentist were to suggest to you that the mercury fillings in your mouth should be taken out to help you with your multiple sclerosis, your AIDS, your Lou Gehrig's disease, your cancer, your dementia, your fibromyalgia, that dentist, in all probability, if it became apparent, or let's say the medical community found out, that dentist would be brought upon charges of practicing unscientific dentistry and could lose their license. If a physician suggested that chelation therapy, bioxidative therapy, might help you with your atherosclerosis, they could lose their license. Some places like Florida haven't even allowed ozone to be used, even though we know it has enormous benefit for hepatitis C and other conditions. That is now history. You see, we can make a difference. As of today, the Florida legislature has enacted a new bill. It is a consumer health bill, and we are very happy because it also included dentists. Even though the president of the Florida Dental Association wanted to remove dentistry from the Health Freedom Bill, it didn't work. And we were able to do an investigative report on the chief witness against this and found that they had misrepresented their background and credentials. And we're now asking the Attorney General to look into perjury charges against this person. Every dirty trick imaginable to stop us from going forward was used. They did not win. We won. The bill passed the Florida Senate by a vote of 35-1. Then it passed the Florida House unanimously, uncontested. Congratulations to all the people who work so hard in Florida to have a model of health freedom that now stands. So at least there is complete freedom of choice for the patient and the physician and dentist in the state of Florida. So we did that. On now to our next piece of legislation. But it takes a lot of time organizing. And that's where I was when I was talking about being out, having meetings, and working, doing the scientific research to present the information. Because the opposition is always well-financed. We have no money. And we just have our resources of commitment and a high level of a passion for what we're doing. But with no money, with just really only volunteers, we beat the entire medical pharmaceutical complex in Florida. There are the votes. Now it's the law. Now let's look at mercury, because that's another big area. Next up on my calendar, electroconvulsive therapy. After that, neuroleptic medications. After that, mercury. After that, fluoride. After that, vaccinations, or at least certain vaccinations. After that, low-level radiation. After that, certain genetically engineered foods. So there's no shortage of causes, but it takes time and commitment, and you must in today's world have the scientific literature, which is there, but you must take the time and pull it together. That's what we're doing today. Take this program to your dentist. Share the following. The link between dental amalgams and the presence of mercury in brain tissue was established in 1987 in a study conducted by Dr. David Eggleston of California in conjunction with Dr. Magnus Nylander of Sweden. The study found a direct correlation between the number of the molars, the occlusal molars, and the amount of mercury accumulated in the brains of 83 cadavers. The subjects of five or more amalgams had an average of 3 times more mercury in the brain than those with no amalgams. Likewise, autopsies performed at the Karolinska Institute of Sweden, whose board of governors selects the recipients of the Nobel Prize for Medicine, found that people with amalgams had 3 times more mercury in the brain and 9 times more in the kidneys than those with no amalgams. The parts of the brain most vulnerable to mercury amalgam accumulation are the occipital lobe cortex and the cerebellar cortex and the semilunar ganglion, according to the study. One of the nation's leading toxicologists, Dr. Louis Chang, also has found a direct connection between dental amalgams, meaning silver fillings, and mercury concentrations in the brain, according to Dr. Chang. mercury levels tend to be higher in those that have the amalgams, and mercury levels increase as the number of amalgams increases, unquote. He is director of interdisciplinary toxicology and experimental pathology and professor of pathology, professor of pharmacology, and professor of toxicology at the University of Arkansas. Dr. Chang's observation is borne out by recent research. In 1999, Croatian researchers studied two experimental groups of rats, one with amalgam fillings placed in their teeth and another who were fed an amalgam supplement daily diet. The results showed significantly higher concentrations of mercury in the kidneys and brains of both exposed groups compared to controls. Even after 2 months of exposure to mercury, brain mercury concentration in rats with amalgam fillings was 8 times higher than in the control group and 2 times higher than rats that ate amalgam supplemental food. The study clearly elucidates the importance of nose-brain root in mercury assimilation. Quite simply, the inhalation of mercury vapors from amalgam fillings delivers mercury to the brain even more effectively than eating it. In a 1996 study conducted at the University of Tübingen in Germany, autopsies of 55 subjects revealed a statistically significant correlation exists between the number of dental amalgam fillings and the mercury concentrations in the occipital lobe cortex. Now, mind you, you must put this in relationship to what you have been told. And what you've been told is that there really is no correlation. And I'm showing you there's actually studies, many studies, that prove that that is simply not the case. And therefore, we have to look at the studies, not bias, not just opinion, if we're to make a healthy choice. Let's look at the link with neurological disorders. Occupational and environmental exposure to mercury is known to cause neurological disorders, including syndromes that mimic multiple sclerosis and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. Dr. Douglas Schwarzendruber, chairman of the Department of Biology at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, feels that as a result, mercury from amalgams is very serious on the brain. He says, quote, "Much of the controversy concerning mercury is the possible relationship between mercury release from dental amalgams and multiple sclerosis. And while the controversy has not yet been addressed by a controlled clinical trial, several studies provide evidence of a causal relationship. In one such study," he explains, "researchers E. Bosch demonstrated in great detail that," quote, "facts concerning the geographical and age distribution, pathological development, and systematology of multiple sclerosis are all consistent with amalgams as the primary cause of the disease," unquote. Now think again what he's just saying. He is saying that researchers now believe that they have found the evidence that the single most important cause of multiple sclerosis is the silver fillings in your mouth. A 1994 paper by Professor Subrud and Kenholtz investigates the hypothesis that mercury from silver dental fillings may be related to multiple sclerosis. It compares blood findings between MS subjects who had their amalgams removed to MS subjects who did not. MS subjects with amalgams were found to have significantly lower levels of red blood cells, hemoglobin, hemocritic compared to MS subjects who had had their amalgams removed. Thyroxine levels were also significantly lower in the MS amalgam group, and they had significantly lower levels of total T lymphocytes and T8 CD8 suppressor cells. The multiple sclerosis amalgam, silver mercury amalgam group, had significantly higher blood urea nitrogen and lower serum IgG. Hair mercury was significantly higher in the MS subjects compared to the non-MS control group. A health questionnaire found that MS subjects with amalgams had significantly more, almost 33.7% more, exacerbations during the past 12 months compared with MS volunteers with their amalgams removed. A 1998 study found, quote, a suggestive elevated risk for multiple sclerosis among individuals who had a large number of amalgams for a long period of time. In a retrospective study conducted in England the following year, the odds of being an MS case increased multi-capacitively by far by four every additional unit of dental caries. This represents a 21% increase in risk of multiple sclerosis in relationship to dental caries. What that means in simple lay language is that for every tooth that you have a silver filling in, you increase your risk of multiple sclerosis. Of multiple sclerosis, Dr. Phillips says, my training with Dr. Yoshiki Omura has led me to know that disease deeply, meaning MS. I don't treat the disease, but I work with doctors who do, and Dr. Omura and his researchers have found that every MS patient has mercury and lead in their brain and spinal cord, along with cytomegalovirus and Borrelia virus, and actually Borrelia is a spirochete, and it causes the Lyme's disease. Let's look at your mercury fillings in Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's disease is a common neurodegenerative disorder that leads to dementia and death. About a decade ago, scientists began to document a connection between mercury and Alzheimer's disease. A group led by Dr. William Markersberry, director of the Sanders Brown Center on Aging at the University of Kentucky, and Dr. William Eamon autopsied the brains of Alzheimer's patients, revealing that the Alzheimer's brain's tissue had about double the concentration of mercury as compared to brain tissues from patients who died of all other causes. They also discovered that in Alzheimer's patients' brains, the nucleus vesicles of Meynert, a brain area that transmits memories and sensations to higher areas of the brain, contained almost four times as much mercury as controls who did not have the mercury. More recently, this team studied concentration of mercury and four other trace elements, selenium, iron, zinc, and one other element, in the pituitary glands of dead Alzheimer's patients. The pituitary gland has been established as a good predictor of environmental fillings or environmental exposure to the mercury fillings. And the study found no increased concentration of mercury in the pituitary, indicating that excessive mercury concentrations in the brains of Alzheimer's patients are not of environmental origin, meaning they didn't get it from something they cooked or something they drank or something in the air they breathed. Well, if it didn't come from their environment, where did it come from? Well, another team at the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Basel in Switzerland investigated whether blood levels of heavy metal mercury are increased in Alzheimer's disease, and they measured blood mercury concentrations in 33 Alzheimer's and compared them with 45 age-matched controls with Alzheimer's, but with no mercury, and they found out that there was not a major depression. As well as to the additional, they had some additional controls of 65 patients with various non-psychiatric disorders. And blood mercury levels were more than two folds higher in Alzheimer's patients as compared to both control groups, which meant that the people who had Alzheimer's and mercury were more likely to have depression. Those who had Alzheimer's with no mercury were less likely to, and that the more mercury they had, the more problems they had. A 1995 animal study in Lorchider Vimy and found that there was credibility to the Alzheimer-mercury connection. It revealed that mercury vapor interacts with brain tubulin and disassembles the microtubules that maintain neurite structure. Thus, ionic mercury can alter a neurochemical reaction involved with maintaining normal, healthy neural membrane structure. And this results in the formation of neurofibrillary tangles, which are a characteristic feature of brain tissue of Alzheimer's patients. A latter experiment by Lorchider and Vimy in collaboration with Dr. Boyd Haley at the University of Kentucky's Lucile Markey Cancer Center builds on this discovery. Rats were exposed to carefully controlled doses of mercury vapor, mimicking the levels found in the mouths of people with a high number of amalgam fillings. The rats deteriorated very quickly, developing brain lesions identical to those in human Alzheimer's disease patients. Boyd Haley, one of the principal researchers, commented, quote, "The results of this experiment are terrifying. I'm getting the rest of my mercury fillings taken out right now, and I've asked my wife to have hers replaced too," unquote. While these dedicated researchers are striving to uncover the secrets of a destructive and much-feared disease, Alzheimer's, the American Dental Association published and widely publicized a study of its own. Clearly, the ADA was concerned about the growing public perception that there is a connection between Alzheimer's disease and the mercury in our mouths. In a study conducted at the College of Dentistry at the University of Kentucky, researchers led by Dr. Stanley Saxe, a retired professor of periodontics and geriatric dentistry, studied 68 subjects with Alzheimer's and 33 controls subjects without Alzheimer's to determine the mercury levels in multiple brain regions at autopsy and to ascertain the subject's dental amalgam status and history. The authors conducted dental amalgam assessments during the lives of the majority of the subjects and in some subjects at the time of autopsy only. They also determined three dental amalgam index scores, the placement, meaning the repair or removal of amalgams, location and time in the mouth, in addition to the numbers of and the surfaces areas of occlusal amalgam restorations. They determine mercury levels in multiple brain regions and perform full neuropathologic evaluations to confirm the normal status of the brain or the presence of Alzheimer's. The results? They found no significant association of Alzheimer's disease with number, surface area, or history of having dental amalgams. Furthermore, the team found no differences in brain levels of mercury between subjects with Alzheimer's disease and controls. Now, there's nothing particularly surprising about the results of the study. Studies that fail to show any positive results are the rule rather than the exception in science. It's important to understand, however, that the failure to find a positive result does not prove that there is no relationship between dental mercury and Alzheimer's disease. It merely shows that the phenomena in question was not observable under the conditions of the experiment in question. All responsible scientists are aware of this fact, except perhaps Stanley Saxe, the lead researcher for the American Dental Association's Alzheimer's study. In a story distributed nationally by PR Newswire on February 5, 1999, Saxe put the following spin on the results of this team's research. Quote, in his own words, "This study demonstrates that dental amalgam is not a major public health risk factor for Alzheimer's disease." This is the first thorough clinical pathological correlative study of humans to show that mercury and dental amalgam restoration does not appear to be a neurotoxic factor in the development of Alzheimer's disease, unquote. Saxe's statements appeared in the media all over the country. One wonders how some of the more responsible scientists who participated in this research, including doctors Markersberry and Eman, whose own discovery, the mercury-Alzheimer's connection, was cited at the beginning of my program, feel about Saxe's totally unscientific pronouncements. How is it, we must ask ourselves, that this so-called conclusive study failed to find differences in brain levels of mercury between subjects with Alzheimer's disease and controls? A relationship would have been demonstrated in numerous studies. Now, what you have not had is you've not had a chance to know that there are other studies. And I want to give you some of the reference points so you'll see that there are studies that do show a correlation, and these studies should be considered. Included in in those would be the following, and I'll just recite some of these. Brain Research, November 12th, Volume 533, page 125. Dr. Weinstrup, Eman, Markersberry, an article entitled "Trace Element Imbalances in Isolated Subcellular Fractions of Alzheimer's Brain Disease." Then we have Neurotoxicology, Spring, 1986, page 195, brain trace elements in Alzheimer's disease. And then we have the Journal of Neuro uh, Transmutation, Volume 105, page 95 or 59, it says, increase blood mercury levels in patients with Alzheimer's disease. Listen again. Increased blood mercury levels in patients with Alzheimer's. And that's a main peer-reviewed journal. And we also have the... Another article in the Journal of the American Dental Association. So when you look at the articles that are not cited, people don't know about, you realize, gee whiz, there are other studies that do show, definitely show, a correlation between the amount of mercury in the mouth, the amount of mercury in the brain, and Alzheimer's. Ziff's commentary on the Sachse study in dentistry without mercury reveals some of the contradictions inherent in Sachse's position. They cite an earlier study of a population of elderly nuns in which Sachse found no correlation between mercury amalgam and indicators of Alzheimer's disease. That study, as Ziff point out, compared a group of nuns with existing amalgam molar fillings to a control group of nuns with no silver fillings in their remaining molars. The nuns in the study ranged in age from 74 to 102. The problem is that the control nuns only had an average of 3 out of a possible 16 molars remaining, meaning 20 if you count wisdom teeth. Sachse apparently failed to consider that the molars that the control nuns had lost very likely did contain fillings. All the nuns had similar diets and lifestyle factors, and that the mercury levels remaining in the nuns' tissues after a lifetime of mercury exposure would be no different from that of the nuns with existing amalgams. In other words, Sachse failed to establish a valid control group. He compared two groups with similar histories of exposure to mercury from amalgam fillings and found that their status with respect to Alzheimer's disease was similar. I consider this junk science. Absolute junk science. My goodness. I'm sure many people in this audience who have any sense of logic would appreciate that if you're taking someone 90 years old and you're counting the amount of mercury in their mouth and they have one tooth that has mercury and you're comparing them with another group that has 7 mercury fillings, what did it ever occur to you to ask, at 90, how many of your teeth have been pulled? Woman says, well, 7. How many of those teeth had silver fillings? 5. It's just junk science. There was a similar methodological flaw in the latter study, the one that the AD publicized so widely. Here, tissue studies at autopsy from a group of 68 nuns with Alzheimer's disease were compared to a group of 33 nuns without Alzheimer's. But there was no control group who had never been exposed to mercury amalgam. That, says the Ziffs, is, quote, a critical aspect of studies of this type. Unquote, the lack of this crucial link in the chain of discovery renders the results questionable, if not worthless. This is the research equivalent of the old shell game, now you see it, now you don't. This is a classic example of the double-speak and denial employed by the American Dental Association and its supporters in their dogged attempt to mislead the public about the dangers of mercury amalgam fillings. They ignore all existing research, which strongly suggests but does not prove a link between Alzheimer's and amalgam. And with one study, they attempt to sweep the whole issue under the rug. The ADA is, meaning the American Dental Association, is more interested in conducting propaganda campaigns than it is in discovering the truth. Their dog defense of amalgam is nothing but smoke and mirrors. But that's not the end of the story. In 2000, researchers at the Neurobiology Laboratory Psychiatric University Hospital in Basel, Switzerland, demonstrated that neuroblastoma cells exposed to mercury show an increase in production of amyloid protein. Now, that's the stuff that makes up the amyloid plaques that are usually found in the brain tissue of Alzheimer's patients when they're autopsied. More recently, Dr. Leuchheider, whose University of Calgary study of mercury's effects on neurite structure is cited above, has produced direct visual evidence that clarifies the precise site and mode of action of mercury ions in causing Alzheimer's-like neurodegeneration. Leuchheider and his research team hypothesize that the growth cones from animal species could be highly susceptible to mercury ions. Growth cones are the structures at the outer ends of neurites where the protein synthesis takes place. Protein synthesis is essential to cell growth and vitality. To test their hypothesis, the team cultured neurons from the central ring ganglia of a snail's brain. Following a neurite outgrowth, metal chloride solution of mercury, aluminum and lead and cadmium and manganese were applied directly onto individual growth cones. Time-lapse images with inverted microscope were acquired prior to and during and after the metal ion exposure. The research demonstrates that mercury ions markedly disrupted membrane structure and linear growth rates of the neurites in 77% of all nerve growth cones. When growth cones were stained with antibodies specific for both tubulin and actin, it was the tubulin microtubule structure that disintegrated following mercury exposure. Moreover, some of the disintegrated neurites were also observed to form neurofibrillary aggregates. Now, what that means in lay language is that when mercury was exposed, it disrupted the brain's capacity to function in a normal way. In a related experiment to determine the growth suppressive effects of mercury ions on neuronal sprouting, cells were cultured either in the presence or absence of mercury ions. We found that in the presence of mercury ions, neuronal bodies failed to sprout, whereas other metabolic ions did not affect the growth pattern of cultured snail brain cells. The authors conclude that this visual evidence and previous biochemical data strongly implicate mercury as a potential etiological factor in the neurodegenerative observations in Alzheimer's disease. We can expect considerable backlash from the spokespeople of the American Dental Association as they try to deny the results of this study. Laura Chider's videos are quite unequivocal. However, you can actually see the neurites dying off as they encounter the mercury. If you just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. Part 2 in Toxic Teeth. We're evaluating amalgam fillings. That's the mercury that goes into your mouth in the form of a silver filling. Presenting the actual science in the most comprehensive investigative-reported white paper ever done on this topic. Once and for all, now, anyone who's concerned about the silver in their amalgam fillings in their mouth will have hard, hard, unequivocal data to support their right not to have it put in or to have it removed. I also believe that this paper, white paper, will be used by many individuals who will now try to seek redress for many of the problems that they have suffered due to what I consider a malice aforethought, almost a predation on the part of the Dental Association and many individual dentists for, in their own disingenuous manner, not seeking this information. It is not one obscure study I'm referring to. There are so many studies, hundreds, that are available that will challenge mercury safety, and yet they could not find one. Let's look at the effects on our immune system. Not everyone who has dental amalgams will develop highly visible reactions that demand medical attention. But even in cases where no easily identifiable disease occurs, mercury will diminish effectiveness of the immune system. As the accumulation of mercury depletes a person's ability to resist the slightest challenge, the patient reaches a threshold point at which he or she succumbs to an illness or disease that appears to be a minor final cause. And we must keep all this into account that not always do we see people succumbing at the last moment and then trying to track back and show that it was mercury. Very hard to do when you're looking from that point of view. Mercury is considered to be a strong immunodepressant because it alters the number of T cells. The cells decrease in number when amalgams, silver fillings, are placed in the mouth and increase when the fillings are removed. You have no idea how many people with AIDS, full-blown AIDS, near death, get their amalgams removed and their immune system bounces back and they regain their health. Very important. And the other metals contained in amalgam can affect the immune system as well. One recent study found the following immune reactions in 1,000 subjects. 90% to mercury, 87% to copper, 83% had negative effects to zinc, 56% to tin, and 45% to silver. In his study of mercury amalgam's effects on immunomodulatory reactions, Dr. Schwarzenegger of the University of Colorado found that intraoral heavy metals altered the quantity and quality of lymphocyte subset distributions. And while functional analysis were not performed on the altered lymphocytes, he states, quote, the consistent finding of recurrent and intercurrent infections strongly suggests the symptomatic patients are immunocompromised by the mercury fillings, unquote. The reactive patients also experienced a series of loss of mononuclear cell viability. More recently, these findings were confirmed by animal experiments done in Sweden. In the 1994 study, mice were implanted in the cavity, the peritoneal cavity, with 100 milligrams silver amalgam or silver alloy for 10 weeks or 6 months. The researchers repeat an unsettling litany of immune effects. Quote, chronic hyperimmunoglobulinemia, serum IgG, autoantibodies targeting the nuclear protein, and systemic immunocomplex deposits developed in a time and dose-dependent manner after implantation of amalgam or alloy. Splenocyte from mice implanted with amalgam or alloy showed an increased expression of class II molecules. The functional capacity of T and B spleen cells was affected in a dose-dependent way. 10 weeks of low dose and 6 months of high-dose amalgam implantation strongly increased mitogen-induced T and B cell proliferation, whereas 10 weeks of high-dose implantation decreased the proliferation, not only mercury, but also silver accumulated in the spleen and kidney after amalgam implantation, unquote. I cite you something that many of you may not completely understand, and I appreciate that. Try to understand why I do it. I want you to have the actual studies done in peer-reviewed journals by qualified scientists who have nothing to do with the dental associations. They have nothing to do with any mercury-filling companies. They're just simply trying to see what's the effect of putting silver fillings into a person's body. Now, when you read a scientific journal, that's the kind of language that you hear and see. But you have to boil it into lay language. What does that mean to me as an individual? What it means is that study after study after study, when mercury amalgams were put in, the immune system went south. It was harmed. On all levels, the immune system had major challenges, just from the mercury itself. Then the immune system would not have been available to fight the normal bacterial and cancer and viral and microbial attacks that occur on a daily basis. So it shortens the lifespan. This means that dental amalgam implantation is genetically damaging and can cause chronic stimulation of the immune system with induced systemic autoimmunity. The authors thus conclude that under appropriate conditions of genetic susceptibility and adequate body burden, heavy metal exposure from dental silver amalgams may contribute to human immunological aberrations, which could lead to overt autoimmunity. This research is strongly suggestive of a link between mercury, amalgam, and autoimmune disorders. Given these results, says Dr. Schwarzenegger, amalgam's impact on immunity should be carefully studied. Quote, it is possible that such individuals may also be susceptible to other systemic effects of heavy metal, particularly since in the rat it is clear that heavy metals can induce autoimmune disorders. Heavy metals should be carefully considered as possible etiological agents in human disease thought to have an autoimmune component, unquote. The relationship to depression and other emotional disturbances should also be explored. Because mercury is so soluble, it can go through the roof of the mouth to within less than an inch of the posterior pituitary gland, which has much to do with our outlook on life. When these glands do not function properly, depression may result. As one doctor, Huggins, says, quote, "It's not the stress that gets us, it's how we interpret the stress." Mercury intoxication has also been linked to mental symptoms, such as form of psychosis, which affects one's ability to make trivial decisions and resolve doubts and resist compulsions or phobias and perform simple intellectual tasks. Other symptoms include a lack of self-confidence and extreme timidity, a self-effacement that can cause severe depression, moodiness, rage, and anxiety, and an irrational fear of death. In other areas, mercury exposure causes an extreme form of fatigue that overwhelms its victims and confines them to bed because they no longer have the physical and mental strength for everyday activities. You can also have general health problems, and particularly those related to mental health, were 45% greater in patients with amalgams in a study conducted by Dr. Robert Silberrud of Colorado State University. Among the common symptoms were sudden unexplained anger, irritability, anxiety, and depression. Sounds like some people I've dated. 1 year after, 86 of the test subjects had their amalgams removed, 70% of the recorded symptoms had either decreased or disappeared. Mind you, we're talking about depression, rage, anger, paranoia, obsessive disorders, irrational fears, irrational needs. We think it's all psychological. We'll either put a person into psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, or drug therapy. We'll give them a tranquilizer. At no time has your psychologist or therapist ever said, "What's in your mouth? Do you have several fillings?" You say, "Why?" What are they going to say? "Well, because there's a connection between those fillings and your emotions." You think your therapist is crazy. Probably he is. But that's neither here nor there. They wouldn't have the science to think that. They wouldn't have generally the confidence to propose it, because it's not just enough for someone to have information. The person has to be open to the validity of that information. Otherwise, it's meaningless, or even it creates an antagonistic relationship. The person says, "Look, my emotions are real. I've been hurt. I've been used, abused." What's the person going to say? Maybe not. Maybe you're making all the events around you, the circumstances of your life, people in it, to blame for something that may just be biologically, something that could be triggering reactions within your brain. And think of all the kids that have mercury fillings and then get on caffeine and sugar and artificial stimulants and then have cytotoxic range reactions from both the mercury and the stimulants and wonder why they can't sit still in school, why they have unresolved anger all the time while they're bedwetting. Nobody's asking what could be wrong with this person's system by what we've implanted in their teeth. I'm suggesting they should all be considered. Even a legitimate situation can be made to seem far worse than what it is if a person's biochemistry is imbalanced. A more recent study by Cyberlug and colleagues provides further evidence that mercury amalgam fillings may be a causative factor in depression, and excess anger, and anxiety. The researchers compared scores on the Beck Depression Inventory for 25 women who had mercury amalgam fillings and 23 women without them. Women with amalgams had significantly higher scores and reported more symptoms of fatigue and insomnia. The women with amalgams had significantly higher mean scores of expressing anger without provocation and experiencing more intense angry feelings. The women without amalgams scored significantly higher on controlling anger. Anxiety scores showed the women with amalgams scored significantly less pleasant, satisfied, happy, and secure, and steady, and had more difficulty taking decisions in an appropriate way. A related finding by the same group of researchers suggests that people with amalgam fillings may be more likely to smoke. The study revealed that People with silver fillings smoke more than people without fillings. It speculates that nicotine has the effect of compensating for the decreased levels of serotonin and norepinephrine and acetylcholine in the brain caused by mercury exposure. A more recent study conducted in Oslo, Norway's National Hospital, reveals that self-referred patients with health complaints attributed to dental amalgam suffer multiple symptoms and frequently have mental disorders. The physical and mental symptomatology of 99 self-referred patients complaining of multiple somatic and mental symptoms attributed to dental amalgam fillings were compared with patients with known chronic medical disorders. The dental amalgam sample reported significantly more physical symptoms from all body regions. Self-reports suggested that 62% suffered from chronic anxiety disorder, meaning just generalized anxiety or panic. 47% suffered from a major depression, compared with 14% in the two clinicals comparison sample, and none, zero, suffered from that in the ones that did not have mercury in their mouth. Symptoms suggesting somatization disorder were found in 29% of the mercury filling group, but only one in a 272 group who did not have the mercury. One-third of the dental amalgam patients reported symptoms of chronic fatigue, and none reported chronic fatigue in the group that did not have mercury. So we're looking at big differences. Fatigue, anger, striking out at people for no apparent reason, or trying to justify the reason by all forms of supercilious contrivances in the group that had mercury fillings. So clearly, mercury fillings alters brain chemistry, alters perception, and that's not healthy. A group of Swedish researchers investigated psychological aspects of 49 patients with oral lichenoid reaction, or OLR, in contact with amalgam fillings, and compared them with age and sex-matched control groups that did not have mercury fillings. The oral lichenoid reactions are lesions of the mucus lining factor, such as personality and psychological functioning and quality of life, were determined by using the Karolinska scales of personality. An additional personality scale and a psychological functioning scale and a quality of life scale. With regard to personality, the patients who had the mercury had significantly higher scores of muscular tension and suspicion, and significantly lower scores on the indirect aggression scale. In addition, the patients who had the mercury were significantly more worried about their health and yet did nothing about it. With regard to the psychologic functioning, patients had significantly more sad thoughts, became dizzy more easily, found it harder to imagine themselves free of anxiety, and had more difficulty in concentrating. And they also had more depression. Similar findings in the hands of the American Dental Association take on a sinister twist. In June 1999, an article in the American Journal of Dentistry cited a study in which 89% of the patients with self-reported amalgam illness were found to have psychogenic disorders, and another indicating the patients suffering from amalgam-related illnesses had, quote, pre-neurotic reaction defensive mechanisms that did not allow them to recognize aggression and threatening situations which the control group would quickly and readily regard as potentially difficult to manage, unquote. The authors warned their fellow dentists that such patients, quote, may present at the dentist's office either self-diagnosed or looking for a cause implicating mercury. In actuality, these patients may have symptoms of either medical problems or psychological disorders such as depression or anxiety, unquote. In this report, appropriately subtitled, quote, a stud status report from the American Journal of Dentistry, the ADA sends a crystal clear message to its members. Watch out for patients who complain about mercury-related symptoms. They are crazy. It is apparent that the American Dental Association, which has turned a blind eye to the mounting evidence against mercury fillings, has also become blind to the suffering of dental patients. On our next program, I'm going to take you on a journey showing you mercury's effects on dentists and the dental profession. Let's just summarize. Study after study after study has shown that mercury can alter our perception of reality. it can alter our levels of energy. It can change our immune system. It can attack the brain. It can be a precipitating factor in multiple sclerosis. It may be a contributing factor in Alzheimer's disease. And it's not one study. It is dozens of studies from quality institutions published in peer-reviewed journals that support this. And yet the Dental Association can find nothing wrong with mercury anywhere. Well, so be it. We have to remember, the American Dental Association is just the union for dentists, just like the American Medical Association is the union for physicians. They're there to protect the interest and well-being of their members, even at the cost of their patients' rights and health. I'm Gary, and all this continues our series on toxic teeth. Part two, we have one more part to go, and I'll do that on our next program. Just a few program announcements with a little time remaining here. First, again, those of you who just joined us, after a long, hard-fought battle, a lot of good has come today. As of today, we have passed an absolutely model of freedom of health care bill in Florida. It has passed the Senate unanimously, passed the House unanimously, passed the Senate 35-1. And is being signed by the governor, it is law. We were up against all the quackbusters, dirty tricks, everything you could imagine, and we prevailed. We won. So all that was for something. Not every effort results in this kind of victory, but this one did. So I want to thank everyone who helped on that down in Florida. So now you can have the freedom to choose, and your doctor can have the freedom to offer that without being harassed, threatened, or brought up on charges. Our next effort, this Sunday night, this weekend, two shows, one from 8 to 9, the other from 9 to 10. Two stations. First one, 8 o'clock, WNEW, 102.7 FM. That's 8 o'clock, WNEW, 102.7 FM. That's easily heard over the whole tri-state area. Turn your radio over immediately at 9 o'clock to WEVD. 10:50 a.m. on the dial. WEVD 9 to 10. Separately and lastly, it's your turn to participate, to cause something good to happen, to protect the consumer rights. And this time, it is our intention to change the laws in New York State to protect consumers who do not wish to have electroconvulsive therapy. I am going to be holding a press conference and a forum to protest on behalf of the victims of electroconvulsive therapy, and we have psychiatrists, lawyers, psychologists, former office of mental health employees, and concerned individuals who are challenging Pilgrim Psychiatric Electroshock victim Paul Henry Thomas, and to seek legislative changes on the heels of the state Supreme Court Judge Hall's unbelievable decision to continue inducing convulsions in a political prisoner's brain against that political prisoner's will. Forced electric shock. It's alive and well. It shouldn't be. Be there, and we're counting on you. So I'd like to see you there. Where and when? It's going to be Monday, May 21st, noon, at the Attorney General Spicer's headquarters, 120 Broadway in Manhattan. Again, 120 Broadway in Manhattan, May 21st at noon. I hope that many of you who have never been to a demonstration, never stood up for something, always playing it safe, always expecting someone else to fight your battles about everything in life, finally have the courage to do something to show that you have connected with the larger humanity of this world. Have a good week. I'll see you Sunday night.